You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insights from around the racing world every weekday. It is Tuesday, November the 10th. It's bright, sunny, chilly here in TW11. Yes, that's right. I have, with a heavy heart, left the Breeders' Cup behind and I'm set for a week's quarantine before heading off to Bahrain. My thanks to Tom Stanley for filling in and doing a terrific job on the show yesterday, particularly with that interview with Breeders' Cup Classic winning jockey John Velasquez. I can't leave it behind, as I said, so I will be talking to more heroes from that wonderful weekend at Keeneland a little bit later. James Fanshawe, Alison Swinburne, the trainer and owner, respectively, of the filly Ordaria, who did it in such good style in the filly and mare turf. And later in the show, in our Weatherby's Bloodstock segment, I'll be talking to Derek Veach, who's not only bred one of the speediest juveniles domestically this season in Minzal, but Du, who excelled in Kentucky on Friday night in Miss Amulet, and you'd better believe it, that is quite a haul of speedy juveniles. But we've been transitioning to the jumps for several weeks now, and we've got the three-day Paddy Power meeting coming up at Cheltenham. A little later, I'll be talking to Kerry Lee, whose Happy Diva looks to join an illustrious list of horses who've won the feature race at that fixture twice. But this morning's headlines are being dominated by the betting industry. Peter Jackson, the chief executive of Flutter Entertainment, has written a lengthy piece in the Racing Post, getting on the front foot as regards the new gambling review and how betting regulation must change to reflect the drastic changes in the betting landscape. While slightly closer to home, the bookmakers have agreed to pay an increase in the amount they pay on racing on their streaming and data deals until December the 2nd to help mitigate the impact from betting shop closures. That is, we gather, to the tune of £6 million. So in both respects, the gambling industry is on something of a charm offensive. David Yates from the Daily Mirror joins me this morning. Dave, why do you think that is?
Well, because it feels that if it doesn't get in first and make a plea for reform, it might get punishment. And so over the last few years, remember fixed odds betting terminals, there was an unholy alliance. I'm always uneasy when Tory MPs and Labour MPs say the same thing. And I'm always uneasy when The Guardian and The Daily Mail say the same thing. But they were as one on stakes for FOBTs, which, of course, were reduced from a maximum stake of 100 to a maximum stake of 2. Now, the gambling industry reads the runes very, very well, doesn't it? And it knows that it's perceived in certain quarters as the big evil of society. We've talked about, we've sorted out tobacco, we've sort of sorted out alcohol, and gambling is the next cab off the rank. So it is a, I agree with you, it is a charm offensive. Peter Jackson's piece in the trade paper, I think, is an excellent piece of PR. And when I say excellent piece of PR, what I mean is that I think it's a credible, a believable piece of PR, in that he says, you may think this is a strange thing for me to say, but I believe that reform is badly needed. Of course, over the last few years, the technology around gambling has changed so much, but the rules haven't. The gambling by younger people, for example, is much bigger and better business than it's ever been. And as a result of that, I think it's widely acknowledged that controls are required in order to prevent people getting themselves into trouble. I think that Peter Jackson's piece, I'm going to quote one piece of it, if I may. If we get the balance right, we can build a much better industry, which commands the support of its customers and also wider society too. I broadly believe that, and I think he believes that, because those of us who work in horse racing and the gambling industry believe that if the right restrictions are in place to prevent people ruining their lives by gambling, that it is, for the vast part, it is an activity that can be enjoyed responsibly and positively by adults. So I think that, yes, it is a charm offensive. It's a good piece of PR. They know that change is on the way, and they feel that if they get not their excuses in first, but if they have the first word about, yes, we're quite happy for this to happen, that it will be reform rather than punishment.
Okay, so that's the gambling industry on the front foot, which would have wider societal implications. Rather more specific to racing is the bookmakers' willingness to give the industry another £6 million. That's the figure reported today. For their picture rights, for their media rights. How do you read this, and what are the reasons behind this, do you think?
I think it's essentially a different arm of the same policy. Whilst in the past we've been used to bookmakers and the rest of the racing industry at loggerheads about the contribution that bookmakers can ought to make to the sport, I think that in this case, again, they have agreed to a payment and haven't been made to do that kicking and screaming. So again, I think this is a broader policy on the part of the bookmaking industry to show themselves in a positive light. Their critics will say that it's a purely cynical move on their part to show themselves in a positive light. But my answer to that would be that you can't have it both ways. And in this instance, I think that the fact that they are playing ball, for want of a more erudite phrase, I think that shows them in a good light. And it shows at least that they have a positive attitude in the two senses that we've discussed, towards reform and towards making a contribution towards horse racing, considering what they get out of it.
Well, I will make no apology for finding it extremely hard to leave the Breeders' Cup behind, but I am back on home soil. It still gives me the opportunity to connect with somebody who was behind one of the best stories of the night, and dare I say it, one of the best stories of the year, or Daria's victory in the Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf. James Fanshawe back in Newmarket. And James, you've got an update on her. She's on her way home.
Yeah, I just spoken to Helen Halliwell, who's travelled all the way through, and she's just she's been on the truck leaving Lexington, going to Chicago. Daria and Helen are on the way to Chicago now to catch a flight back to England tomorrow morning.
Sometimes the stupid question after a race is, what does this mean to you? But I think you've just told us what it meant to you with the celebration that was caught for all the world to see with you and Jacko cheering her home. What a really tremendous moment that was.
Well, it's been banned from being shown in our house because it's so embarrassing. But I'm afraid the fact that we looked like we were going to win, and it was just thinking we actually spied the cameraman before the race, and I thought, oh God, what's he doing there? And it's sort of the thing that ITV do, trying to pick you out as well, as you well know. I saw him there, and I thought, right, well, he's there, and we've got to put up with that. And then obviously the race got going, and Pierre Charles got his fabulous run on the inside of the first bend, and we're going, and obviously I've completely forgotten about the cameraman, and so Jacko, and anyway, when she came to the straight and it looked like she's going to be third, then suddenly she looked like she's going to win, and I'm afraid everything went, and then after he won the race, I saw him still filming. I thought, oh God, and I spoke to him. I said, oh, did you get all that? He said, yeah, that was great, he said, you're lucky because everyone I've filmed so far has finished last. So anyway, so it was. I think from an outsider, you all saw that what it means to everyone, and even if it was a bit over the top.
But it was wonderful to see, especially in a year like this, that you're being completely enveloped by the experience as a team as well.
Well, all week we got out there early because I never had a Breeders' Cup runner before, and we got there actually on Sunday night just to see the whole build up and see the whole, you know, how everything worked, and it was just one of those weeks when glorious sunshine in Kentucky, and it was Not everything went smoothly along the way, so don't let me say it was absolutely wonderful all the way, but there was lots of discussion and what we were going to do. And obviously, we, from one side, we were training the horse, but on the other side, there was the whole sort of, there was a real buzz about Keenan and the build-up for the Breeders' Cup, you know, and we were wonderfully looked after by the Breeders' Cup people, and from everything from the Keenan racecourse everyone being looked after socially and your accommodation, everything was just helped this wonderful build up to a fantastic event.
And James, she'll come home and she'll have her well earned rest and you'll roll round again for 2021.
Yes, yeah, as I said at the beginning of the call, she's on her way home now. And obviously she's got lots of she's swamped in cotton wool now because she's done an amazing thing, you know, it's an amazing achievement for her, not just the yard, you know, it's been a great teamwork by Pegasus Stables, but for the filly herself to actually, you know, to gone and done it, you know, she'll be getting a well-earned rest now. And speaking to Alison Swinburne, her owner, who's been, you know, it's really bad luck for us, and she didn't get there because of COVID and everything, and her family, and Anthony Stradas' manager, and who bought her in the first place. We're all so keen to keep her in training next year because, I think we'll see how things settle down, how the dust settles. But the plan is to keep her in training next year because she broke the track record, and she's progressive filly with loads of scope. So hope she's in one piece, you know.
James, thanks so much for talking to me. Congratulations again. Really special moment.
Well, thanks for everyone's support, Nick. It's been a wonderful week.
Well, owner Alison Swinburne is with me now. Alison, what a thrill Saturday night was. I know you couldn't be there in person, but how was it watching at home?
It was nail biting. It was thrilling. It was amazing. It will rate as one of the best nights of my life, obviously. You know, having been in racing for as many years as I have, this is what you're always trying to achieve. And it's the dream that keeps us all going and going back to the sales and keeping on trying. And for it to actually happen, you know, with James, who's a great friend as the trainer and the most brilliant ride from a jockey, for everybody in my family and everyone at Pegasus, it was just thrilling.
A lot of people have said it was wonderful to see those yellow, green and red colours passing the winning post in such a famous race. The history of those silks is a very long and illustrious one.
It is. They are actually, we had the silks, but with a green cap, were worn by Lester Piggott when he won on Nijinsky in the Derby. And we actually have those original colours at home. Obviously, my father then and mother had those colours with the yellow cap and had a lot of success with them over the years, both over the jumps and on the flat. And then when my dad decided to stop owning, he allowed me to take on the colours. So, yeah, it was really special. And he was with me in front of the telly. And it was wonderful, wonderful.
And your daughters as well?
Yes, my daughters were here and my granddaughter. So it really was a family affair.
So do you think that sort of unique moment with sort of four generations of the family sitting there watching something quite so historic could sort of perpetuate this love of the sport for generations to come?
I really hope so, because I think, you know, it is the fairy tales, isn't it? It's glass slippers winning. It's Audaria, the ones that aren't expected to. That's what gives everybody, you know, who has a passion for racing, the hope to keep going and just be involved. It makes it special, because at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that you've got to have the most expensive, best bred animal. You know, that you can go out there and do it, and it's just amazing.
There is something about James Fanshawe, isn't there? I was amazed it was his first Breeders' Cup runner, but he doesn't waste entries, and he's got a certain Midas touch. What do you think makes him a good trainer?
I think what makes James a great trainer is that ultimately he is a real horseman. So he will always put his horses first. I think he understands them, and he's brilliant at getting the best out of them. He can be patient. He's very good at placing them, and that's where I think you see him come into his own. If you look at Audaria, you know, she'd come from two poor runs, then she'd won at Newcastle, and she goes and wins a Group One in France. And that's where he is brilliant. And I think he can train any type of horse. He can train, you know, people all often say he's brilliant with fillies. Yes, he is. But then he's got the Tin Man, who's a sprinter. You know, he is a real all-rounder. And as I say, a genuine horseman.
Alison, thanks so much for talking to me. And well done on a really memorable success.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Well, it's one of the great stories of the year, and lovely to hear there from James Fanshaw and Alison Swinburne. I always find it difficult to get the Breeders' Cup out of my system for a few days. Dave, I've got 2 weeks to get it out of my system now, sitting at home. But that was definitely one of the stories of the year for me.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty hard for all of us, Nick. And I say that as someone who wouldn't describe himself in any way as a Breeders' Cup nut. But it was an enthralling evening, and it was made all the more interesting, wasn't it, by the fact that there was such success for the European runners. And Orderia, a particular story. I mean, obviously, it's 24 years since Walter Swinburne won at the Breeders' Cup at Woodbine aboard Pilsudski, a jockey who was a master of his craft and obviously a fine trainer too, and he was taken from us far too early. So it was a poignant victory. The fact that James Fanshawe hadn't had a runner at the Breeders' Cup before surprised me. I must admit, I don't keep on top of those Breeders' Cup stats, but I would imagine that a trainer like him, who'd applied his trade at the top level for so many years, would have gone out to America in the past. But yeah, it was a great story. But it was an amazing evening, wasn't it? I mean, the COVID-19 positive test for Christophe Soumillon and Iretz Mondizabal, the fact that Pierre-Charles Boudot, that his stock has risen so amazingly over the last 5 years and yet still seems to get higher, but also Colin Keane and Dermot Weld combining with Tanawa, 26-year-old Colin Keane, very much at the start of his career in the top flight. And Dermot Weld has won, Belmont Stakes, Breeders' Cups. Sorry, he hasn't won a Breeders' Cup until this year, Melbourne Cups. But he was very much the trainer in, say, if we turn the clock back to 1992-93, that he was very much the pioneer of international challenges by trainers. He's been overtaken in the decades that have followed, but that was a landmark victory with Tanawa. Be interesting to see over the next couple of days whether she stays in training. She's favourite or joint favourite in some lists for the Arc. I fear that she may have run her final race.
Trying to remember the last 5-year-old that the Aga Khan had in training.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, most of them go onto breeding after their 3-year-old campaigns, don't they? So it's unusual to see a 4-year-old. I think it'll be even rarer to see a 5-year-old. But I think that situation will be made clear over the next few days.
Jumps fans will be champing at the bit because they'll be saying, come on, we've got a 3-day meeting at Cheltenham this weekend. And they'll be absolutely right. It's the Paddy Power meeting. A fabulous fixture it is as well. And hat tip to ITV for going early on the action this week with the Clonmel card covered on Thursday as well. So you've got 4 days of terrestrial television coverage to feast on if you're stuck at home in this lockdown.
Yeah, it is. It's there was a quote, I think it was a tweet from Ed Chamberlain about how they were going to try and keep people going through the next few weeks, and they've certainly delivered on that this weekend. It's an absolute feast. The 3 days of Cheltenham are going to be superb. They're going to be really informative too. I think that one thing I like about this meeting is that the quality is spread over the 3 days. It's not just a question of one day and the other. You know, the Friday and the Sunday are burgled and everything is stacked up on the Saturday, but it's consistently a consistent seam of quality through the 3 days.
Can I just bowl you up a few names that I'm looking forward to seeing, and you can either agree or disagree? First of all, Easy's Land in the cross-country race. I don't think there's ever been a more talented horse to tackle these fences, and I say that advisedly because I realise what Tiger Roll's been doing over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's 2 from 2, isn't he, at Cheltenham? Remember going back to last year, and we thought that Tiger Roll was going to prepare himself for that history bit at Aintree in the Grand National with a victory. He was basically knocked aside by Easy's Land, who had been purchased by JP McManus. And will the two of them, is the clash on for this Friday? The last time I heard, yeah. I thought it was.
Yeah, it looks so like it. And Easy's Land's odds on now.
Yeah, well, it's perhaps not totally surprising. We know that Tiger Rolls had his issues, and we know what the priority for him will be, don't we? We know that it's not. He's not. We don't expect him to be razor sharp for the second Saturday in November.
And the other horse I'm really looking forward to seeing is Put the Kettle On, the Arkle winner, because she was completely unheralded last season, still is to a certain extent. Yet it might just be that was a really good race.
Yes, I think going into that, as you say, she was largely ignored. I should give a hat tip to my Reach PLC colleague Chris Goulding, who tipped Put the Kettle On at 16-1 in the Arkle. But I think the feeling that day was that I think maybe people felt that the race had unfolded to the advantage of Put the Kettle On, but there didn't seem to be any fluke about it. You know, like every other horse in the Arkle, or most of them, she went in there with an upwardly mobile profile over fences. It'd be interesting to see what she can do this season.
Well, another horse I'm looking forward to seeing, and perhaps another mare that hasn't had the headlines quite that she deserves, is Happy Diva, because after all, she is the defending champion in the Paddy Power Gold Cup. It was the Bet Victor last year, and she will bid to emulate some great names of the turf, Half Free and Bradbury Star and Cypher Malta, by winning two of these. Kerry Lee is her trainer. Kerry, how's she doing?
She's in great form, thanks, Nick. Yeah, she's in really good form. We're looking forward to Saturday.
And to what extent have you been sort of working backwards from Saturday since she last won the race?
Yeah, quite a lot, to be honest. I mean, obviously her season was cut a little bit short, but she ended the season at Festival, only narrowly beaten by Simply the Bets, you know, in the great handicap there. I think she ran a career best. She ran quite well at Wetherby, first time out this season. She's entitled to come on for that a little bit. And yeah, it's all systems go for Cheltenham.
What is it about Cheltenham that you think particularly suits her? Because she does seem to grow another inch there, doesn't she?
Well, I think the pomp and ceremony that goes with it is obviously quite fun. And she's definitely a bit of a show-off, is our diva. She's very well named in that respect. But yeah, she really enjoys it. I mean, she's won at a variety of tracks when you look at it. I mean, she's won at Wetherby, she's won at Fontwell, she's won at Ascot, Huntingdon and Cheltenham. So you kind of, I'm not sure that it's particularly just Cheltenham. She has some great form there. Perhaps you get the better races there and that's why you're looking towards it. But she seems to come up a hill, she runs on a flat track. She's incredibly versatile. We're very lucky.
And one thing she doesn't mind is them going flat out, because she's hard enough and tough enough to take it.
Oh, yeah, she's a proper race mare. She's a true professional, that's for sure. She seems to be able to cope with any kind of race pace. And, yeah, she just enjoys it. Her zest for racing is immense.
Now, you can spot equine talent, we know that, but you spot talent in riders as well. Richard Patrick, you were one of the first people to latch on to how good he was, and he's having a fantastic season.
He has. I mean, one of his biggest winners so far this season. I think he rode for Henry Daly at Cheltenham last meeting. He rode a very nice winner for me at Etoxeter with De Machine, who was running first time over fences. Yeah, he's a very talented chap. And I think he's only one winner away from losing his £3 claim, and he'll be fully fledged and on even keel.
But I suppose, crucially, he'll have had that experience and he'll have had plenty of big race experience as well by the time he does.
Indeed. He's very cool and calm on the big days, I have to say. I'm always in awe of jockeys when they, you know, they get legged up onto these horses and it's my job is done and it's over to the jockey and the horse, and thankfully so.
Kerry, thanks for talking to me. Best of luck Saturday.
Thank you very much, Nick.
My thanks to Kerry Lee there, the trainer of Happy Diva. And hearing about these two great mares, or fillies and mares, or Daria and Happy Diva under both codes, makes you think that they'll both be terrific broodmares when their time finally comes to do that. And talking of the betting industry, it's time for our Wetherby's sponsored bloodstock segment this week, in association not only with the Wetherby's Global Stallions app, highly recommended, but also the new Stallion book, which has just come out. 300 sires included in there this year. Amongst them new stallion, Threat, who will stand in France at the Arts du Mont Goubert, and who was produced and bred by Derek Veitch at Ringfort Stud. And I've been speaking to Derek, who's had an amazing season, particularly with two-year-olds, Minzal, the Jim Crack winner, but on Friday night at Keeneland with You Better Believe It and Miss Amulet, both covering themselves in glory and a wonderful story behind the latter. And I began by asking Derek how he felt watching on Friday night.
Tremendous excitement. Two great 2-year-olds for Ringfort Stud this year. Delighted that we have been able to watch all that in the current climate. And it was really interesting to see the tactical element of the race and how the young jockey responded with You Better Believe It to a slow break and did so well to come third. Brilliant for Miss Amulet, who's been tough all season. She's a real rags to riches story for Ringfort Stud, and we're delighted that the two of them have done so well for us.
Tell me a little bit about the story of Miss Amulet, where she came from and how she's done so well.
Okay, so she's a homebred foal, which went to the foal sales as a filly foal with a weak pedigree. And at the time, we were coming out of a recession, and filly foals were not that popular at the sales. That particular year, with nearly 70% fillies to 30% colts, and I was trying to offload some of the fillies, and we sold her for €1,000 in the Goff's foal sales. The Dunns bought her, and she went to the Ascot sale, where McDonoghue of the BBA bought her, and she went then to Ken Condon, and ever since she joined Ken, she's done nothing, only improve as a racehorse. Every day she's turned up at the track, she's been genuine. She's now sold to Doreen Tabor, and we're delighted that she's done so well for those new owners. She's just been a star for the stable, and she's made everybody money all the way. She's just an ideal product advertiser for Stud, you know.
You say she's made everybody money along the way, I guess, except for you, but you get your rewards indirectly.
I got my reward because I sold her half-sister this year in the Ascot sale, and because of the big update that Miss Amulet had created for the pedigree, it was easy to sell the half-sister. So, yeah, financially I came out of the whole thing well in the end, although I didn't come out of it very well when I sold her as a foal. I don't mind. I think it's important that everybody gets their chance. They're all investors, after all. We're out there making a plan and breeding a horse to sell to people who are willing to lay out their cash and buy that foal and hope that it'll do well for them. And when it does, it makes us very, very happy.
Is this the best season you've had so far, Derek?
It's the best 2-year-old season we've had. Yeah, I'd say so. It's very unusual to breed 2 or 3 horses that can win any of those nice 2-year-old races in the UK, but to breed the winners of the Jim Crack, the Flying Childers and the Lowther all in 1 year is a bit lucky, I think, maybe, yeah.
Well, you're being very modest. I think it's a pretty extraordinary record from the amount of mares you've got for yourself and your clients on the farm. Just tell me about how you're feeling going into the foal sales coming up, because you've had a great year, but we are in uncertain times, obviously, and you're dealing in a very commercial portion of the market upon which the industry really depends for its ballast, quality horses, but at affordable prices.
Look, I'd be more optimistic about the foal sales than I would have been 3 months ago. I think the yearling sales have come and gone, and because of that, generally, everybody's had a reasonable workmanlike season despite the adversities of trying to get a sale on in the first place and then trying to achieve some sort of a sale with people attending and so on. I think it's been a very successful sales season, considering all the problems we've had to face. So I'm more optimistic about the foal sale than I would have been. Having said that, I think if the news generally was a little bit brighter going forward into the spring about vaccination and COVID management and living with COVID was more practical, racing got going in its natural way with racegoers back, I think everything very good at the sales again next year. And I think the recovery from this will be very quick. It's not like an old traditional depression, this sort of thing has created a lot of savings in people. People haven't been able to go on holidays or spend their money. So the money is saved and it's there, and it'll all come back into the industry very quickly. And I think we'll recover. But we must get a vaccine. We must get that feel-good factor. So I'm more optimistic.
Well, thanks to all my guests this morning. Dave Yates is still with me. Dave, you're going to send us home with a winner.
Right, it's Robin Gold, and that's in the 3:23 race at Lingfield Park. We'll get used to these new race times. We've certainly done it with the trains over the last few years, so I don't see any problem. 3:23 at Lingfield. Robin Gold, successful at Perth and Lingfield last two starts. This represents a rising grade, but she's on a roll here for Dan Skelton, and I think the hat trick is very much on the cards. 3:23 race at Lingfield. It's Robin Gold, number 7 on your race card.
Dave, thanks so much for your time. Thank you very much for listening today. It's great to be back. Great to have you with us. And we will see you again, same time, same place tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Thank you.